this is the most important fight right now, is that we defeat this constitutional amendment, because that will have impacts for so many years to come.
Hello, and welcome to Marching On. I'm Esme Tseng, Communications Director here at the ACLU of Kansas, and I thank you for joining us. 2026 is a midterm election year, but there's one item on the ballot that is more important than any single candidate, a proposed constitutional amendment that could upend how we appoint judges to the Kansas Supreme Court. And just like the proposed amendment that got walloped in 2022, this proposed amendment will be on the primary ballot in August, not the general ballot in November. This vote could have an impact on civil liberties for generations to come, so we're taking a deeper look on this episode. To do that, we're first going to hear from ACLU of Kansas Executive Director Micah Kubik and Political Director Russell Griffin to share about the current system, the proposed system, and all of the pitfalls of special interest judicial elections. One way that the ACLU of Kansas is working to ensure every voter understands the consequences of this proposal is by supporting Kansas United for Impartial Courts, a broad coalition group dedicated to keeping our court systems fair. A quick note, the abbreviation for this org is KUIC, which often gets verbalized as QUIC. So when you hear people say QUIC, they mean Kansas United for Impartial Courts. For our second conversation, we hear from two QUIC staffers, Anna Marie Rabori-Simmons, Communications Director, and Lauren Clapper, Field Director, who share more about their work for QUIC. Both of these conversations are hosted by Jesse Keelman, our Communications Manager. And now, without further ado, let's hear from Micah and Russell.
As Esme introduced, I'm here now with Micah Kubik and Russell Griffin. Micah, I wanted to open up with you. This is the second midterm primary in a row with a constitutional amendment on the ballot. We know the last one was voted down by a wide margin. What is the link from the last one to this one? And is there a wider context that people could use to understand why they're once again voting on an amendment?
So in 2022, Kansas voters overwhelmingly rejected a constitutional amendment that would have banned abortion statewide. And they did that because the state legislature was unhappy about a court ruling that had come down from the Kansas State Supreme Court. So in 2022, what voters did was say that they wanted the state constitution to continue defending the right to abortion access. And that right was one that had been established by the Kansas State Supreme Court. All of that is important because it is, in fact, the context for what we are doing in 2026, which is that the Kansas State Supreme Court has been a fair and impartial body for 70 years. It is a body that is not perfect. I often disagree with it. The ACLU often disagrees with it. We take cases there. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose, but we always have confidence that the court is fair and impartial. And because it is fair and impartial, that means that sometimes people don't like the rulings. Here in particular, we're talking about legislators, extremists, who haven't liked a series of rulings that the Kansas Supreme Court has handed down, including the right to abortion, including public school funding, including restrictions and government mandates. Over and over and over again, the Kansas State Supreme Court has upheld people's rights and has upheld the Constitution in a fair and impartial way. And the extremists who gifted us this constitutional amendment don't like that. They don't like that the court is fair and impartial. They don't like that it protects people's rights. What they want instead is a court that guarantees the outcome for the most extreme agenda ahead of time. And so the connection between all of these things is that legislators, politicians, extremists, billionaire political donors around the country, they have an agenda. They haven't been successful in getting it through the legislature all the time, or when they have succeeded there, the court has struck it down. And so rather than accepting that as the verdict, rather than accepting what Kansas voters said, they say, let's just change the court instead. Let's give us a court that is not fair, that is not impartial, that is instead bought and sold politicians, paid for by billionaire political donors. And the connection between the two is that in 2022, voters said, we want there to be checks and balances. We want our rights protected. Kris Kobach and the folks behind this amendment said, we don't care. Let's find a new way to do it instead. Let's now change the court. That's the connection. It's always the same thing. What is going to stand in the way of extremism? The court has done so on a fair and impartial basis. That's why we're here.
It feels like the people could not have been more clear time after time at this point of like the court said no, the people said no, we don't want this. So really appreciate that recap and that explanation. One aspect of this amendment vote, especially within the broader history we've seen, is that it's about a lot more than just some administrative process. Micah, can you help listeners understand this moment and what's at stake?
Right. So this constitutional amendment that is on the ballot is the single most important thing that has ever happened, certainly in Kansas. It is something that will define the way the state looks, feels, acts, behaves, the place that it is for literally generations to come. It is the single most important thing that has ever happened because it is not just about one elected official, one candidate's term in office. A governor holds power for 4 years. A state representative holds power for 2 years. State senator holds power for 4 years, right? Those are time-limited things. This constitutional amendment will literally define what Kansas looks like, not just in 2026, but in 2036 and 46 and 56 and 66 and beyond. What is on the ballot is the judicial selection process. Not necessarily the most glamorous, most exciting words that have ever been uttered in the human language. Not something that riles people up, right? But what is on the ballot is not actually a discussion about the optimal method for selecting court justices. What it's really about is who is in control, who holds the power. This amendment would give power to billionaire political donors who want to buy and sell justices in order to advocate an extreme agenda. And what is the agenda that they want? Well, we ain't got to speculate about it. We don't have to wonder. It's not some great mystery of the universe never to be discovered. They've told us over and over again what the agenda that they want is. That they want to change the Supreme Court in order to ban abortion immediately, to eliminate or at least dramatically reduce funding for public schools, just as they did in the Brownback administration and as the court struck them down. They want to get rid of protections for voting rights. They want to get rid of protections for LGBTQ plus equality. They want to get rid of protections for immigrants' rights. They want to get rid of accountability and transparency. They want to get rid of checks and balances. They don't want there to be three different branches of government. They just want one unibranch where the most extreme members of the legislature get to control everything. All of that is what's really at stake. Yes, it can sound like some sort of Socratic discussion, some sort of grand political dialogue in a political science seminar about what the optimal method of government should be. That's not what's really on the table. What's really on the table is whether Kansas, as we know it, an imperfect but beautiful place, will continue to exist in the way we know it or not. What is really at stake is whether the rights that we have won together over the last 70 years will continue to be respected and validated and affirmed, or whether they will be tossed onto the ashbin of history instead. And all of that means that this is so much more important than some petty dispute about the seven individual people who serve on the Supreme Court. It is about whether our courts will be fair and impartial. It is about what Kansas will look like.
Thank you so much. So, Micah, I know this isn't happening here in Kansas in a vacuum. Other states have made changes to their Supreme Courts that roughly line up with this proposal. What have we seen in those instances, and what can we expect here in Kansas if we were to pass this then?
So, Kansas adopted this model back in the 1950s as a result of a pretty extreme example of political corruption. We have this system for a reason, because we wanted to take the politics out of our courts. We wanted judges to be judges, not politicians. We did that for a reason. We've already seen what it looks like when courts are political, when judges are politicians rather than judges, and we didn't like it. That's why we changed. Since we changed in the 1950s, many other states have also left behind the politicized partisan elections and gone to a merit-based system as we have, where justices are selected on their merits, on their experience, on their temperament, on their ethics. They are vetted and screened, and then the voters still have a chance to weigh in on whether to keep them or not. Since we did this in the 1950s, other states have done the same. Not a single state, though, has gone in reverse. we would be the very first state to have a merit-based system and go back in time to the worse system. Everywhere else has said that this is a way to insulate us from politics and protect our rights. And they've done that for exactly the same reason we have. Because we can look around us. We can look at other states that do, in fact, have these sorts of politicized partisan elections with billionaire political donors buying things. And we don't like the way those look either. In Wisconsin, just to our north, not too long ago, they had an election for a single state Supreme Court seat that cost $100 million. $100 million for one state Supreme Court seat. We got seven of them here in Kansas. So that means $700 million. I don't think anyone really wants Supreme Court justices sitting in a tiny airless room, spending all of their time dialing for dollars, calling billionaires to get political donations. I don't think anybody wants to go into the courtroom knowing that the justice has taken millions of dollars from some donor. It's impossible not to at least wonder about whether that's going to influence the decision that is made. And it's impossible not to be influenced by those sorts of millions of dollars. So we know what it looks like because others have done it, and it's not pretty. That's why we want to keep fair and impartial courts here and keep our judges judges rather than politicians. What we also know about this is that if we were to become the first state in the country to go back in time, and I don't think we will because I think the voters of Kansas are a lot wiser than the legislature gives them credit for. We know it would set off a nationwide spree towards doing this. In the same way that in 2022, Kansans rejecting the abortion ban amendment sent a signal to the rest of the country, this amendment in August is going to send a signal to the rest of the country, too. It's going to send a signal about whether our courts are going to remain fair and impartial or whether they are fair game for the most extreme amongst us, whether they are going to be the next target in the assault on accountability, whether they are going to be the next domino to fall in the attack on transparency and separation of powers and democracy. I think that we're going to say no to that. I don't think voters are going to say, let's start a nationwide race to the bottom to selling our courts to billionaire political donors.
Thanks so much, Micah. With that context, Russell, could you give us an overview of how the judicial selection process works now and how this amendment would change it?
To start off, before we even talk about this, you have to go back to the 50s. Back in 1950, I believe, 56.
Oh, I guess too. So I think, yeah, I feel good about that.
1956, there was this thing called the triple play scandal. And no, we're not talking about something from a Royals game. The Royals weren't even around yet. We still had the Monarchs here in Kansas City. When this happened, the governor at the time was a guy from Dodge City named Fred Hall. He lost in the Republican primary that year. So the election continued, and a Democrat ended up winning the election in November. So after that all happened in November, January rolls around, and the Chief Justice was a diehard Republican at that time. Of course, judges got elected back then by the people. Chief Justice Supreme Court was ill. He did not want a Democrat to pick his replacement. And so right about 2 weeks before the swearing in of the new Democratic governor, Chief Justice decided to resign, and then the governor at the time, Fred Hall, decided to resign also, had his lieutenant governor, who then became governor, put him in as the new Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And that's why they call it the triple play. It was all done together. The lieutenant governor became governor for only like 10 or 11 days. So the legislature comes back immediately, put an amendment on the ballot for the next election, and we've had that new system ever since. But now it's based on merit selection. The Supreme Court Nominating Commission has 9 members. 4 are non-attorneys. They're appointed by the governor. 4 are attorneys that are elected by members of the Bar Association. Each of those groups are by a congressional district. So you got 4 lay people from each congressional district, 4 attorneys from each congressional district. There's also a chairman of the board who is an attorney elected by attorneys statewide. So you'll hear a lot about attorneys are controlling this. There are regular people, not just attorneys.
I mean, very purposely built that you have attorneys with expertise have lay people that are outside of that system.
Exactly.
It makes sense given the history of it too, that like, okay, how do we prevent this cronyism and corruption?
Right.
Like, okay, we got to have some professional insight. We got to have some widespread insight. Like, well constructed.
And it's not concentrated in one area. It's all over the state. Every congressional district is represented. So the other parts of it are candidates have to be at least 30 years old. They need to be a lawyer, obviously. If you want to judge the law, you kind of need to know the law. They have to have been a lawyer for at least 10 years in good standing. They don't have to be a practicing attorney. They don't have to be a sitting judge. They could be a law professor at KU or Washburn, just as long as they're over 30 and are a practicing lawyer in some way, shape, or form. We're not just getting a mechanic coming on to be, or a politician for that matter, which is what we're really talking about. We don't want just politicians being elected to the court. The commission, once there's a vacancy on the court, the commission takes in applications, just like any other kind of job. They take all these applications. Then they actually do public interviews with these people. After they do all the interviews with these people, they have public deliberations. You can watch these on YouTube. They have them live streamed. Everything's transparent. They whittle those names down to about, usually it's three. And then the governor gets to pick from one of those three and appoints them. If the governor doesn't appoint anybody within 60 days, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court gets to pick from those three names. So there's a lot of steps involved, a lot of transparency along the way, and then ultimately it comes down to legal and judicial experience, character, ethics, educational background, even their temperament, things that they've done in the community, respect of colleagues, and most importantly, their impartiality. So that's really what we're talking about. So once they get appointed, this is where all this election of judges comes in. The people of Kansas already have a right to vote on these justices. After they've been in this office for 1 year, after they've been appointed by the governor, they're up for a retention vote. If you've ever voted in a November election, you generally have voted to retain or not retain a judge. So we've already got the power to boot these folks out of office if they're not doing their job correctly. If they win their retention vote the first time, they could serve for another 6 years before they have another retention vote. What this amendment would do is would allow judges to take campaign donations, solicit campaign donations, and they could be the chair of a party. Like they could run the Republican Party or Democrat. They could be your Supreme Court justice.
And when you say like it allows them to do that, I think what we know about the system is that at a certain point it requires them to.
It would. You would have to if
yeah.
you're going to run for this. But the amendment actually does tell us it cuts out the language in the Constitution that specifically prohibits judges from doing that stuff and just leaves it open. The other kicker to this is it doesn't tell us what the rules for these elections are. Would it be a partisan? It's left up to the legislature to decide how these elections take place. And as we know, the legislature here in Kansas,
nothing ominous there.
So it leaves it in the hands of the legislature how these elections work. And nobody has talked about it. Current, Senate and House leadership has not said, oh, this is what we'd actually do. They haven't come out and said, no, there's going to be guardrails on this. They haven't come out and said, no, these won't be partisan elections. Matter of fact, it's an unspoken secret, a loudly spoken secret, really, is that, no, they want these to be partisan. This is why, because they've lost every time, as Micah said, they've lost every time on these kinds of things at the ballot box. So let's change the game up. Let's change who the refs. It's like changing out the refs in the finals of the NBA. We don't know what the process would be here on out, other than that there would be elections and judges would have to go out and actually campaign and raise money from billionaire political donors and the like.
So that's such helpful context. Hey, we had the system that was open to bribery and cronyism and corruption. Mm-hmm. And then we created a system that has transparency and validation and oversight, public input.
Yep.
There's plenty of oversight and openness on the front end mm-hmm. and all throughout their tenure. And yep. should we replace that with something that does none of that?
And, most of the states that have gone to this merit-based system, it's usually been borne out because of scandal, corruption, just south of us in Oklahoma. Same thing, probably, I think, about 6 or 7 years after it happened here in Kansas, same thing happened down there, massive scandal, bribery scandal in the Supreme Court down there. So, and then what happened? They changed the Constitution to make it the merit-based system. Why go back to corruption? Why go back to these states? There's no good reason for this to happen. We have a good system in place. It needs to stay the same way. It's just irresponsible to change it at this point in time. It just opens the door back open for corruption.
It's a reminder that every warning label is there for a reason. Mm-hmm. Russell, I know you're involved with Kansas United for Impartial Courts, the group leading the Vote No campaign. Can you share more about that organization and how it intersects with our work here at the ACLU of Kansas?
Yeah, QUIC, which is the acronym we use for that. It's a broad coalition. It's about 70 organizations across Kansas.
Wow.
Represents a wide swath of just everyday people, people that care about civil liberties. It's a group that really cares about the impartiality of our judicial system and making sure it's fair, not beholden to special interests, billionaire political donors, dark money, secretive groups. You know, you've seen it in other states on these Supreme Court elections. They'll spend millions and millions and millions of dollars. The court decides a lot of things in Kansans' lives. And this is why it's such a broad coalition, because it comes down to things like voting rights, reproductive rights, educational funding, criminal legal reform, immigrant rights, the rights of our LGBTQ Kansans, First Amendment, the list goes on and on and on. But how it intersects with us, those are things that are at the core of ACLU, both here in Kansas and nationally, and should be at the core of every American's beating heart. Those are things that people should care about and things that the current system tries to keep fair and impartial. This amendment inevitably makes that fight even harder, because it would turn our justice system into really a pay-to-play type of free-for-all where justice isn't blind, but it's bought. So that's why we're in this fight. That's why all these 70 other organizations are in this together. And it's not just ideological, you know, it's not just conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat. We're all over the place in that regard. We all just care about having a fair and impartial court that's not paid for.
Yeah, that's, I feel like that's really telling. I mean, there are a few decisions in my life that have been easier than how to vote on this amendment, but it's all the more telling when it's like, yeah, 70 organizations representing, like you said, a majority of Kansans ultimately, all agreeing that this is terrible, and a couple billionaires wanting to put their thumb on the scale and be able to do what they want to do. It's like, yeah, that's an easy one. Like, yeah. I don't have to sweat that one.
There's a reason why we changed it, and that's why we're fighting to keep it the way it is. And people will say, oh, but what about democracy? What about voting? Again, like I said earlier, we get the chance to do that. If they screw up that first year, we can boot them out. Then we've got 6 years. There's also methods for impeachment, too. There are lots of guardrails in the system we currently have, and we are trying to fight to prevent that, because we have no guardrails if this goes away.
I'm here with Anna Marie Ribori-Simmons, Communications Director at QUIC, and Laura Clapper, Field Director for QUIC. First, can I have each of you share a little bit about yourself, your journeys, and also discuss what your role at QUIC looks like?
Thank you for having us on today. Again, my name is Anna Marie Ribori-Simmons, and I'm the Communications Director for Kansas United for Impartial Courts. And in that role, I'm really responsible for ensuring we get our message out to Kansas voters. I came to this role because I'd been in this space for quite a while, both in advocacy and issues as it pertains to Missouri and Kansas, and most recently working in reproductive rights and reproductive health care. This ballot measure is incredibly important to not only my personal, but my professional life, because I know the implications that an impartial court has on our rights here in Kansas, and it's important that we protect that system. So kind of coming to this QUIC campaign has been a natural fit.
Awesome. And what about you, Lauren?
Yeah, Lauren Clapper, she, her. I'm the field director with Kansas United for Impartial Courts. And I am from Kansas City, Kansas, and that's where I live now. And so it's been a real honor just like over my career, which is not super long. I'm not that old yet, but just to be able to work in the state that I call home and really be working, like, I like to talk about a little bit about like the long game, you know. Yeah. I think that over the long term, like, a lot of us are invested in this work because we see the need to like build power so that then we can win on policies that we know will make Kansas just a better place to live, raise a family, buy a home, all those things. And like, I'm personally invested in that because I am doing all of those things. You know, I'm from here. I started out in this space, it's been like 4 years ago now, at least professionally, as a organizer at Planned Parenthood Great Plains. So Anna Marie and I got to work together then.
This is our second time working together.
Wow. It's great to like...
Yeah, to be back together. And obviously, I think a lot of us in Missouri and Kansas, in the Kansas City area, when we are passionate about certain issues, yeah, we kind of end up overlapping throughout our careers.
Yeah. So it's nice. The people that I'm working with, I've known now for several years, which is rewarding. And I started out working on the ballot initiative in 2022, and we defeated that anti-abortion amendment by 20 points. I always like to bring that up, you know, like we did it then and a lot of us are back and here and ready to do it again. I talked about the long game, but really like this is the most important fight right now, mm-hmm. is that we defeat this constitutional amendment because that will have impacts mm-hmm. for so many years to come. I'm very excited to be back in this role and to, you know, this isn't our first rodeo. We know how to win and we're excited to do that.
Yeah.
I think you can hold both of those things in healthy proportion of like, this is the most important yeah. thing right now. And I look ahead to a future where we're not constantly asking, should we do the dumbest thing we can possibly think of and having to say, vote no, vote no.
And to kind of like add to Lauren's point here, Lauren and I both worked on the 2022 ballot measure and obviously are very proud of the margin in which we defeated that amendment in August of 2022. But it has direct implications for why we're back here today in 2026, because we know we've heard it from the politicians who have put this amendment on the ballot. We know their motivations. And it wasn't long after that vote in 2022, in which Kansans spoke very clearly, as Lauren mentioned, with a 20-point margin, where they stood when it came to protecting abortion rights in Kansas. And politicians instead turned around and have tried to shepherd in a different way to go about that. So now we're looking at this judicial selection amendment because they've said they want to slowly and quietly put justices on the Supreme Court that can chip away at the protections that we know Kansans have already voted to protect in really overwhelming numbers.
Mm-hmm. So Anna Marie, when you're looking at that then, yeah. especially like kind of in your role as communications yeah. director, what are some of the ways that you're communicating with voters to get them informed and inspired and to understand what's happening with this yeah. amendment?
So even though Lauren and I are in communications and field, we work really closely together because we're both speaking with Kansans just in different ways. But one of those ways has been really reaching out to groups and organizations across the state. I mean, QUIC itself is made up of more than 80 organizations, again, all across Kansas who have an interest in defeating this amendment. And so in my particular role, I'm talking to a lot of them. I'm making sure that they have the messages, that they know what this amendment is about, why it was put on the ballot, and again, why it was put on the August ballot. As we will say, reflecting back to August 2022, we're seeing the same kind of playbook again, where it's on what they are hoping will be a low, you know, voter turnout August primary. So spreading the word in that way, but also making sure we are on social media. We are talking to Kansans through our local media outlets, whether that be here in Kansas City or in Wichita or in Dodge City. So it's finding all those ways that we can reach Kansans in the mediums in which they might be paying attention.
That makes complete sense. And Lauren, my question for you is similar, but from the field perspective, although it sounds like there might be a bigger purview for you there too, but how are you getting people engaged and active in Kansas communities with this amendment?
Yeah. So in my role as field director, I set the strategy for how we directly communicate with voters. So that means like having conversations with them directly, which is a real joy a lot of the time. And the main ways that we are reaching voters directly is on the phone. So we do regular phone banking. We do that multiple times a week. Mm-hmm. And also at the doors. So we go out and knock doors. Field programs are interesting because you're able to target directly the people that we know that we need to reach and we need to turn out to vote on August 4th so that we can win. And so it's really exciting work. I have a great team of organizers who support the volunteers who go out and do this work and actually get to have the conversations with yeah. voters. So just like supporting those volunteer efforts, which are really critical because I think this is really the most important thing you can do. If you want to mm-hmm. have an impact on this amendment, if you want to help defeat it, the most important thing you can do is come help us talk to voters. And so we invite you to do that. we're phone banking multiple times a week. We're knocking doors multiple times a week. And we're doing that in Kansas City, Wichita, Topeka, and Lawrence.
Lauren's always kind of like making me think of, oh, there's some other, I think, things to touch on or points to get across. But one thing I want to touch on that Lauren said, too, is in some of the groups that we have presented to together, it really is a grassroots effort because we're talking to, you know, organizations across the state who have an interest and then going and talking to their communities. And so we're trying to equip them with the best information and tools we can to then go out into their communities. Because like we say, both with phone banking and door knocking, is Kansans want want to hear from other Kansans about what's on the ballot and why it's important they vote no. So it's really on us in different ways at times to be able to get that message out there so that they can carry on those conversations.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
Yeah.
And just kind of some of the overlap in our roles too. Yeah. It's just working with all of these great organizations. They're already very connected to their community. Mm-hmm. And so often they are the best messengers to reach those people. You know, they're trusted.
Absolutely.
They've been established. And so it really takes all of us together to reach all the voters that we need to reach so that we can defeat this on the 4th. Yeah.
And it feels like that's inherent too in building the infrastructure and the architecture and the broader movement. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously both of you are very engaged in this campaign. That feels like an understatement or maybe a little obvious, but I want to ask just both of you personally, like, what has led you to get involved with this campaign? Why do you support it? And why is it such a big part of what you're doing in our communities right now?
I mean, mine goes back to early on in my career. I started my career working for a U.S. senator from Missouri on Capitol Hill. And I'm from the area. I'm from the Kansas City area. But while I lived in D.C., I knew I wanted to come back here eventually with my spouse. And we wanted to have kids and raise a family. And so since I've been back here, it's been really important for me to be engaged in issues that I can have an impact on. I've also worked with Planned Parenthood for many years. And seeing not only the vote in 2022, which Kansas was the first vote after the Dobbs decision in June of 2022, that was such a, I think, a career high moment in many ways. And I don't know if Lauren can attest to this too, but to see so many Kansans turn out in August of 2022 was really inspiring and such a reminder of why we do the work we do, because people do care passionately about protecting their rights. This amendment is another way for, as we've seen, for politicians to go a roundabout way to cut school funding, to try to ban abortion. And it's really important for us to spread the word. Again, we mentioned this is an August primary. We know we have work to do when it comes to talking to voters. And so for both of us, just in different ways, it's about how do we connect with voters across the state of Kansas so they know where to vote and how to vote no on August 4th. And I think it's just a reminder that the fight doesn't stop. It just takes on different forms. And so I'm more invested in this work than ever. And this is just a different way that we have to fight back, and we have to spread the word about now.
I love it. Lauren, do you have any thoughts or?
Yeah, I love that question because I think it really just comes back to, like, this is where I was born and raised, and this is where I want to continue to live for the rest of my life. And so making my local community in Kansas City, Kansas, but also across the whole state, just like a great place to live and work and raise a family is really important to me. And like we said, you know, this is the most important fight in that battle right now is to make sure that our Supreme Court stays impartial. We have a trusted, tested system now. And we know that if this amendment passes, it's just going to hand more power to billionaires, which I think we can all agree we don't want. They have enough power already. We want that power to stay with everyday Kansans. It's really important that we have a Supreme Court that is held responsible to our Constitution, and not extremist politicians, not billionaire donors, because we've seen and they've said the quiet part out loud that what they want to do is ban abortion. What they want to do is gut public school funding, you know, all of those things that will make it harder for myself and my future family, but also for like my neighbors and my friends and everyone else that I care about in this state. And, you know, that's why I'm here.
Well, I'm glad you are here. I'm glad you're here too, Anna Marie. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time today. And thank you for all the work for this amendment.
Yeah.
Thank you to Anna Marie and Lauren for joining us, as well as to Micah and Russell for their insights earlier. If you're looking to get involved in the effort to keep our courts impartial, Quick has many ways to get involved on their website, quick.org. You can sign up to phone bank, donate to the cause, sign up for email updates, and much more. However you want to get involved, you can get connected to those opportunities at quic.org. That does it for this episode of Marching On. Tune in next month for more conversations with the people who are at the heart of the civil liberties movement here in Kansas. And until next time, keep marching on.